Sign up to The Economist for in-depth curated expert analysis of world events and topics ranging from business and culture to science and technology. You'll get the weekly digital edition, online-only articles, curated newsletters on politics, the markets, science, culture, and China, and full access to The Economist Podcast Plus. The Economist is independent journalism for independent thinking. Go to economist.com and get your first month free.
Phil, we are very lucky to have you. You must get this a lot, but I do feel like you got to figure it out. You nailed it. You
thanks.
Got yourself
one. I won show business.
You won show business. You really did. I've been trying to figure out how do you crack it? How do you scheme it? You got what? Everybody Loves Raymond, 9 seasons, and now you've figured out another successful show that pays you to travel the world to eat lovely food and meet interesting people. You cracked the code. What's the secret?
The secret is you struggle for, I'm going to say, 35 years to get Raymond on the air, right? It's the sum total of my life up to that point. And then after Raymond, you would think, well, this guy's got it made. He could do whatever show he wants. No, because if you walk into your agent's office after having a sitcom with any success and you say, you know what? I think I'd like to host a food and travel show. They look at you as if you've pooped on their desk.
Are they asking you at that point? It's like, no, we want Raymond part two. Everybody just likes Raymond. Everybody kind of likes Raymond. And you're like, no, we don't want to watch you eat food.
They encouraged me to write another sitcom, which I guess is natural. Listen, even I thought that's what would be the next thing for me. But while doing Raymond, the business had changed greatly. The sensibility of Raymond wasn't really that welcome when we stopped. It was barely welcome when we started. But that's kind of show. And you can see, I don't know if are there any 4-camera sitcoms left, by the way?
Not any. I mean, I think there's still
there might be a couple.
The Connors is on. There's a couple on there, but nothing has broken through culturally in any way at all. And I know that's been a format they've been trying to keep going, and they haven't had major success.
Well, they blame the form. There's nothing wrong with the form. The form is this perfect in-between theater and film, you know, because you did shows with live audiences and they were broadcast. So when you're doing it right, you feel like you're having an evening in the theater, right? There's nothing wrong with the form. It's the content. As soon as a show that's decent comes back, yes, the form will be alive again. It's not the form. Anyway, it took me 10 years to get the food show.
You know, it took you 10 years to get the food show, but, you know, you look at Anthony Bourdain and you look at Stanley Tucci and you look at you. Now, all of a sudden, we've got all these food shows, travel food shows. What do you think happened and why did it take 10 years to catch on and why is it so hot now and how long does it last?
All good questions. Bourdain was a hero, a superhero to me. I would watch Bourdain and say, he's amazing. I'm never doing that. The things that he can do. In fact, I sold the show with this one line. I said, I'm exactly like Anthony Bourdain if he was afraid of everything. And that let you know that I had a take on that type of show. Still took me 10 years to get it. But a lot of that had to do with, who's this guy? He's never been on camera. Why would we have him? Right? But when I first sold it to PBS was the first place. We did our first 6 episodes there, and then Netflix came along and took it from there. And it just, I think I know why it caught on. I think because it was the only one that did have a sense of humor, or at least my sense of humor. I think that's why. It's all I can offer. I'm no chef, and I'm certainly not an adventurer. I say that in that line. I think though, the show for the guy who watches Bourdain like me and say, amazing, I'm never doing that. People look at me and they say, if that putz can go outside, maybe I can too. And that's all I'm trying to do is to get you off the couch to travel. We're so provincial in America. So many of us, you know, 2/3 of Americans don't have a passport. Did you know that?
Is that right?
Yes. And I think the world would be better if we all could experience a little bit of other people's experiences. I would dare say, Governor, we wouldn't be in the position we are today and be so divided if people traveled a tiny bit more and got exposure to other ideas and other human beings.
Right. Did you know Bourdain?
I did have dinner with him once.
And what was your impression? It just seemed to me it'd be such a haunted individual, at least towards the end, but such a remarkable.
Obviously, but I didn't see that side. I saw a guy actually sweeter and more down to earth and more interested than the TV persona, where I think he almost manufactured a coolness. I'm not saying he wasn't cool, but that's what he wore on the outside as well. He was the coolest guy in the world. Everywhere he went, he was cool. You remember that famous scene where he literally sat with Obama on little stools in a Vietnam noodle shop.
Yeah, right? I do remember that. Yes, I do. Yeah, just remarkable. Why do you think, Phil, that traveling, if people traveled more, what's your sense of why they would connect more? What is it that you think that travel brings you? Because it's an interesting way to talk about it.
Well, I would love for people to travel around the world everywhere they can, even if you can't go around the world, just in your own town, in your own state, in your own country. And just by being a half-decent human being, by being nice, you're now a representative. You're now an ambassador for yourself, your family, your community, your town, your state, your country. We need nice people to travel, right? Because God knows they're getting a lot of other messages. What you get in return is a new perspective on life. This is invaluable. I can use an example. My first trip to Europe was when I was 23 years old. I'd never been anywhere. I'd never been outside the country, nothing. I went to Paris. I was living in Washington Heights at the time in New York, in a pretty low rent area. I'm walking around Paris. I'm going, look how magnificent. How can you not be knocked out by Paris, right? But I'm marveling even at the trees, the way the trees have been planted on the sidewalks to look so glorious. So the food, the people, the architecture, the nature, everything about it. I go home. I'm like invigorated. I walk down the street in my neighborhood. And for the first time, I went, hey, we have nice trees too. I never knew because I had no basis for comparison. I had nothing to, this is just all trees look like that. No, your trees look like that. But you have to see other trees to know that your trees look like that, right? Yeah. That's what travel does for you.
You got to see those cypress trees in Italy to be like, oh, no, what, these oaks here, they're not too shabby.
That's right. They're not the cypress trees of Italy, but look how magnificent they are too. You walk in Central Park in New York. Is there a better place on earth? I don't think so. I've been to a lot of places. Central Park, for the way that place has been designed and every square inch of it has been art directed from the beginning. These are geniuses who made that park. It might be the most beautiful piece of art ever created. That environmental theater of that park, where everywhere you look is a gorgeous vista.
I mean, the food part is interesting, too, though. I do think if you extend to that idea of travel is this great way, obviously, to know another culture, to bring culture and see through new, fresh eyes the benefits you have at home.
Yes, and with food, you're literally taking in the culture.
I try to dislike someone who is different than you if they have fed you food, right? That if you're eating the food, if you're sitting at their tables, you're discovering the things that they find beautiful and they care over that. Like, that, I feel like you bring that back and it's so eye-opening. And I do often say, when people talk about how divided this country is, and like, what can we do or what have you? I think there's three simple things I think of. One, travel.
Yep.
Go somewhere else.
Yep.
Two, read a book. Get inside somebody else's head.
Yep.
Just see what it's like to see through somebody else's
head.
That's,
again, another
and
form
three,
of travel. Yep.
That's what it is. You travel. And I go, three is concede something. You have to give up something in your conversations with somebody else to give them a seat at the table. And so I think like there are small functional things we can do that can that can bridge these divides that often feel so, so large and
I'm with you 100%. That's brilliant. And from where I come from, I've found that food is the great connector. And then laughs are the cement.
I like that. I'll take that.
So, right? So everybody eats. Everybody eats. The thing that you do that's very specific to you is, yes, you even though I think you're trying to make a point in many of your brilliant videos, obviously you're trying to make a point, but that concession, you do give them that. You do give them, we're here for a reason, and you're not making fun of them in their passion. You might be making fun of them in their reasoning, right? Or right. Or almost being empathetic in that, oh, you poor people have been fooled. You've been tricked. That's what's fascinating to me about you is how you're going to get, if you keep doing what you're doing, if nobody kills you, how are you going to get them? Because I think that's the turning point. Governor, correct me if I'm wrong. I'd love to know your take on this. How do you... They're not going to get the message until they themselves feel that they have been betrayed. How do you convince someone of that? Does it take their own? It's like you're never going to be able to teach them. They're going to have to experience it for themselves. Is that what it is?
Boy, that's a complicated. It takes a complicated answer, Phil. Uh-huh. I think. You know, when we see where's this movement come from? I think right. The New York Times had a piece over the weekend, and it was in Sunday's paper, and I never finished it, and I don't have the paper. But, you know, the issue of I'm not making the money I thought I should make.
Yeah.
I'm a blue collar. I'm middle class. I'm falling behind, and I'm really angry. Or I'm afraid that the things that I grew up with are going to disappear along this issue of immigration. And by the way, this notion that you ship these migrants on airplanes
to
places
is yes,
I put out a tweet on it. It's just terrible. But you know, it's sort of like if you have somebody that tells you it's not your problem, it was somebody else that took this stuff from you. We've seen this before,
of course.
Negative populism,
right?
And then people get in there, and how do they come out? Sometimes maybe they see things. Sometimes that maybe they listen. I know this. If I yell at them, I'm getting nowhere.
Of course.
It's got to be a reasoning. Look, I was just the other day at a place where talking about this latest vaccine, which I just received.
Okay.
And had this person say, well, I don't think one life was saved from the vaccines that we had.
Wow.
Now, it's just so frustrating.
Yes.
It's like, what? But you know, these conspiracies that are across the board. Remember, it was Robert Kennedy Jr. who started the anti-vax campaign.
I know. He
pushed himself away from his family.
Yeah.
I don't, and maybe sometimes you tell me, Phil, you're a creator that touches people. Is it sometimes frightening for people to figure out what they've always believed to not be true? I mean, do they lose a sense of themselves? Do they feel as though, oh my goodness? I mean, maybe they're afraid to look.
I think you hit it on the head. Listen, we can have arguments in our own family where I always find it so hard not just to get other people to believe what you believe, but sometimes in your own house, right?
Yeah.
So people believe what they want to believe,
if you can be young, if you can open your mind and actually be able to say, you know, I think you're right. You know, I you make a good point.
I mean,
to me, it's liberating to be able to open your mind.
And
it's
isn't it great to learn
to
things?
It's great exactly to learn things. Right.
I remember on that same trip to Paris, that first time. I remember I saw a shirt in the window and I'm like, I'm going back for that shirt. I'm going to have a shirt from France. I'm going to go. And I went at 2 o'clock in the afternoon and the store was closed on a Wednesday. I'm like, what's going on? Wait, that store's closed too. Everything's closed. What the hell's going on? Is it a holiday? No. What's happening? Oh, we shut down from 2 to 4. Why? Don't you want to make money? Why would you shut down in the middle of the day? You know what the answer was? So we can enjoy the day. What? I never heard anything like that before. And all of a sudden, light bulb.
Yeah.
Hey, that European idea, Spanish idea, Mexican idea of the siesta, of taking that time. Why? To not let the whole day go by with you in the office. That seems smart to me.
There's a millennia teaching us that collaboration with outside ideas only benefits a culture. And I do fear that's a lesson that we need to relearn. There's so many things we can bring in. There's so many things we can import and build off of. I look at to the question of change, I think something that bums me out, because I think about it all the time, is, you get in these discussions with family members, you hear people who don't believe vaccines are going to help you. And then yes. I'm like, I'm worried about your kids. I'm worried about all of these types of things. And I do think there is something special to this moment that is scary to this moment and perhaps under talked about is, good old Trump's folks becomes the identity of a lot of people that John speaks to. There's a lot of working class people who feel they've got a bum deal and they're looking for community and they're looking for more access to opportunities, something I totally empathize with.
But they let a rat in the house. They didn't.
They let the rat in the house.
The rat is going to eat them. They don't understand. How do you make
the magic? The magic trick is he makes it an identity. He makes it a badge. And the problem is that rat is a bum deal. And now you're stuck with all his points of view. And everybody's telling you they're a loser point of view. And it only doubles down on that fear that you have.
I'm worried. My big worry is that we don't have a definition of truth in this country now. We are arguing about things, about kind of essential things that, does a vaccine work or not?
I know.
Can we believe in science? These things.
Is the sky blue?
Or give you another one.
Yeah.
The Earth is actually not going to be over next week if we don't do something quickly. That's another one. Right. I mean, it's not just one side. It's a lot
of
stuff.
Wait a minute. No, wait, this is, Governor, this is where I get you. You're trying to both sides of this. One, we're talking about vaccines. And the second, you think we're overplaying the dangers of climate change? Is that what you're saying?
No, I think to say, though, it's a cataclysmic event that's going to happen next year is an overreaction.
Who's saying that?
There are people who believe in this. It's a religion for them.
Oh.
I don't want to get into names. And one of them is a political figure who says, if we don't have this all done by 2025, we're done. It's
Governor.
Over.
Here's what I'm going to say. The other major news story today is that Puerto Rico, 100% of the island, doesn't have electricity right now.
100%. It's interesting because I have a friend who's in Puerto Rico. And I talked to him this morning. And he said it's just typical of the news that they would make it out worse than it is.
Huh.
He said, most of the people live in like San Juan and on the edges, they don't live in the middle. But if you look at the videos, and I've not seen all these videos, if you look in the videos, it looks like there's this torrent of water. He said, actually, we had a bigger problem in a storm, a year ago or whatever. So I said to him, well, you got to understand, Jerry, you got to understand that there's something in human beings that want to go to a race and see a car crash. There's something that they go to a boxing match, they want to see a knockout. In other words, there's something in us that wants us to look at those things that are kind of extreme. It gets our attention. I mean, you go to the city of Chicago or you go to the city of San Francisco and they are collapsing. They're collapsing because of a policy that doesn't make any sense.
You saw what
the CEO of McDonald's said about Chicago. He said our restaurants are a laboratory of what's happening with drug overdoses and violence in San Francisco. Go there. Take a look at what's happening in San Francisco today. Anything that is extreme, Phil, doesn't work. We need reform, but we don't need extremism on any side.
Can you be more specific on that, Governor? You're equating all of these things. You're equating.
Well, I can tell you that defunding the police movement contributed to it.
What are we
Whether
talking
you like
about
it or
that?
Not.
Where is that happening, though, Governor?
If you can't see it, there's not a reason to argue about
Governor,
it.
Governor, just like climate change, it's coming faster than you think, my friend.
What's coming faster?
You want a moderate debate, Governor. You want a moderate debate, but you keep playing both siderism. And so when we're talking about things that are destroying this country.
You should. Because you know what? When you can't have proper policing in the city of Chicago and you have a melting down there, and you have the violence you see, you don't think there's a connection?
Do you think they're defunding the police? Don't you think that's
yes,
rhetoric?
They have put handcuffs on the police where they couldn't do their jobs. This is not, Jordan, they cut the funding in a lot of cities, and now they're boosting the funding because they know they made a terrible mistake.
Because, Governor,
stop
I think...
Stop reading just a bunch of left-wing stuff, and look at something else.
I don't need to be screamed at by you, Governor, I think you're falling. You're a smart guy who's falling into the talking point to the far right.
No, I'm not falling into anything.
Can I finish my... Please let me finish my statement here. You're falling into the talking points of defund the police. It's just a big name to get people to pay attention and get scared. And now instead of having earnest conversations in tough situations about policing, what we do is we have these extremist points of view, and you have smart people who overreact as opposed to trying to find better, more efficient ways to deal with violence in these cities. And then also, you equate and you both sides of this game. And so instead of talking about a very real thing that you're so smart to know about climate change, you understand there needs to be action that takes place now. And you throw it away and you compare it to anti-vaxxers, and then you want to have a moderate conversation? That moderate conversation can't happen if we don't face the facts that are very real and affecting people today. We'll be right back.
This episode is brought to you by ShipStation. If you run an e-commerce business, you know how much work it takes to produce something great while dealing with complicated shipping issues. That's why over 130,000 companies have turned to ShipStation, an innovative tool that allows you to focus less on shipping and more on building your brand. With ShipStation, you can manage orders, label printing, reporting, and customer service on one easy-to-use dashboard. You'll reduce warehouse costs with reliable enterprise solutions and save thousands on shipping costs with discounts up to 89% off. Plus, you can effortlessly import orders from everywhere you sell online. So, turn your shipping challenges into opportunities for growth. Go to ShipStation.com and use code POD to sign up for your free 60-day trial. That's ShipStation.com, code POD.
And now back to the show.
You know, Jordan, I've been involved in climate reform in my state before you probably knew what it was, okay? Secondly, I think it's a serious problem, but I don't believe the world's going to tip over in the next 5 or 6 years. Secondly, you take a look at what's happened around these major cities in this country when they have led an effort to defund and cut police budgets and put those people down. You know what? No one's been more involved in police reform than I was in the state of Ohio. I don't know how much police reform you've been involved with, but I've actually been involved with it and I've held them accountable. But the fact of the matter is, you ask people about Chicago. Look at the speech they made. Did you hear about the speech the CEO of McDonald's made?
No, I don't know about Chicago.
You go back and read it. Okay, you go back and read what he said. You go back and look at what they did in Minneapolis and the amount of cutting that they did in the budget, and now they're restoring it. Go back and read that stuff.
I understand, and then you'll see where I'm coming from. But you understand what happened in Minneapolis too, Governor, for God's sake.
Yeah, but you want to have a moderate conversation, but you lose the empathy to talk about it. No, Jordan, here's the situation. No one is saying that we should look the other way. We should prosecute people that do things, and we need to reform the police. But they went into flat out, we should eliminate. Actually, I'll give you the quotes from the congresswoman who said we should eliminate funding for the police. Okay, this is a fact. I don't know why you won't look at it. And all I'm saying is extremism on any side doesn't work. To defend the police where they have been wrong is a mistake. To try to work and defund them, the impact in these communities is devastating. Devastating. And I mean, and all I'm trying to say to you is what people want to do, liberals want to do, is all they want to do is pick on the right. And they never want to say, okay, what's wrong on our side? Because both sides have committed problems. You know, there were actually Democrats that questioned the election of George Bush. You know that? He shouldn't be the president of the United States.
Are they still questioning? I mean, have they kept up?
I guess they let it go because Bush was president. They said it was not a legitimate election. Mm-hmm.
Let me just make a point.
If you can't see those kinds of things, then you're not able to come together.
I just think
you're not able to find common ground.
I'm looking, but the more both-siderism you go, I don't think it's a good look. Phil.
Here's what I have to say. In my travels, this might be a generalization. Most people in the world are so much better than their governments. But I fear for my fellow Americans who have fallen under a spell, yes, a cultish spell, yeah, of some kind. I understand times are hard. I understand, but they're, yeah, choosing the wrong lifeboat. They're hooking themselves up to an anchor.
But I would say to Phil, you and, yeah, Jordan both, we have seen people in the Republican Party, and first of all, yeah, I happen to be a Republican, but I'm an American before I'm a Republican.
Yes.
I mean,
yes,
there's, okay. And we have seen some people on the Republican side who are just way out there and so totally irresponsible and so sucked into this stuff.
Yeah.
It's discouraging, and in some ways it's a little scary.
Yes.
Okay.
Very.
And I know that.
When we see
I'm just
Nazi salutes at rallies.
Yes, I agree with you. I'm just saying that we've seen it on both sides throughout history. We've seen it. And whenever it's extreme, there's a difference between a reformer who's passionate, who breaks down barriers, versus somebody who's extreme, who's way out there, way out on the edge. Bring us together. You can't just say, well, you're wrong and everybody else is right. You got to say, look, we all share in bringing us together and realizing that we all make mistakes.
Jordan, correct me if I'm wrong, but you're the thing about defund the police. Have police departments literally been defunded? I think many Democrats said, wait a minute, only the extremists are saying defund, but everyone believes in having the police, right?
Yeah, I think it's become a catchphrase and a boogeyman. And I do think there are more extreme people. And the governor, I agree.
Yeah.
I think, I don't love the rhetoric around it, but I understand it as a tool to gin up support and ideas. I think that's where that started. And I think, secondly,
that's a bad phrase. And by the way, when Biden was running, he denounced it immediately. Knowing
totally
that it's a bad phrase.
And I think there's all those politics that are around that. And I think and I agree with the governor. I think America has dealt with, especially this past summer or the two summers ago, with the killing of George Floyd, there's such a focus on policing and policing reform. And there need to be good debates around best practices and money that can go into mental health, as opposed to having police officers out there doing double duty. I think there's good conversations that need to take place. I think my frustration and my ire gets up is I do think the use of the politicization of that phrase obfuscates the real conversations that need to take place in these,
right,
cities. And they just become these quote unquote liberal bastions where I think it's people trying to do these really tough work. I mean, that's what's happened in New York.
Yeah.
We're dealing with violence and we actually have a more conservative liberal mayor right now who's struggling on some ends, but is trying to, he's not talking about defund the police, but he's trying to deal with violence in this city. And it's tough and it's complicated.
And you can't say nothing's wrong either.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
There's common sense. Let's have common sense in every department.
Yeah. And Phil, you talk about using comedy and laughter as a tool, and you've gotten to do it both in the sitcom phase and also,
yeah,
out in the world. How do you wield that? And has that evolved from your early career to where you are today? And how much of that affects, is that because of who you are? And how much of that is because of the times that we're in?
They're both connected.
Yeah.
Obviously, but I stumbled on the key without realizing it. In the pilot of Everybody Loves Raymond, I didn't know there was a scene coming up in the pilot that I was writing. How are we going to get across the fact that Ray is going to have a hard time with his parents? Well, a story had just happened to me where I sent my parents the Fruit of the Month Club. And my parents reacted as if I'd sent them a box of heads from a murderer. They flipped out. My mother said, I can't talk anymore. There's too much fruit in the house. She really couldn't believe that this was going to keep coming every month. And so I put that scene in the show, almost verbatim. That's the scene that got the show on the air. Why? Because it was really specific. It was really, I was talking about, I don't know your mom or your dad, but I get letters to this day from Sri Lanka. That's my mother. Why? Because I hit on some specificity that's universal. I didn't know what it was. But that's the key to everything. It's the key to why your bits are so great, because It's you. You're very specific to who you are. You're not being general. You're not trying to hit everybody, because if you do try to hit everybody, then you miss everybody. I dare say, Governor, if you make a speech, you try to make it as specific as possible. It's not just platitudes and generalities. You try to give specific examples of what it is. Now, the comedy part of that in trying to get your message across, if you don't pepper your message with some gloss of entertainment, no one's listening. We could get any message across on Raymond that we wanted, provided that the jokes were fun. I can get any message across I want and somebody feed Phil, providing that there's some humor and the food is there. I'm only using food and my stupid sense of humor to get you to travel, which I do think is worthwhile, right? And would make the world better. That's my serious message underneath. It's in the book, it's in the show, it's in the podcast, it's in my work. I figured it out at 62. I figured it out.
Hey, Phil, for people who say, I don't really want to travel because I'm afraid, you know, I'll leave town, I'll leave home, I'll be over there, things will happen, yes. I'll lose my passport.
Yes.
So talk to the fact that some people have, okay, but you got a big crew there. They're just going, you know, just husband and wife.
Of course.
And, you know.
I don't have a big crew.
So what's the best way? Well, you know what? I mean, the two of them are going alone. They're going to get on a plane.
And, go to the next town. There are people that don't get off their couch. Go to the next village. Go to another state. Take baby steps. You don't have to. Or listen.
Exactly.
Go
to Canada.
When people ask me, where should I go? I have little kids. I don't want to go until they're grown up. I'm like, don't be crazy. Go to Venice right now with the kids. Little kids love Venice. Every car is a boat. The ambulance is a boat. Exactly. The fire engine is a boat. Everywhere you go, it's like it's a small world ride, except everybody waving is Italian. And they will walk anywhere as long as the walk ends in gelato or pizza. And in Italy,
my kids traveled a lot when they were very little. We didn't know how much they were taking in, but thank goodness they did, because it's made a difference looking back on them now. Phil, my wife and I went to Portugal. We went to Spain, then we went to Portugal. Great. And they say Portugal's like the hottest place going right now. Have you been there? What do you think about it?
Lisbon was, of all the shows we've done so far, Lisbon is the place that more people tell me they went to because of the show. Lisbon is this, but my joke is that it was, for years, Portugal was the New Jersey of Spain. They saw it on the side. They said, well, if we're going there, we go to Spain. That's the more famous one. They had bad PR. I don't know what they had, but you go to Lisbon and it's like the best of Europe.
Yeah, it's really amazing place. Yeah,
Jordan, have you been there?
I have not. Honestly, I have not been to that part of Europe. The last big great trip I've had was Italy, and a little bit of Greece. And
that's
wonderful.
Tell Phil you took your mom.
Well, I'm going. I have a trip with my mom planned to go to Italy. So
great.
That's great. In the future. I think you are right. I actually, we've talked a little bit about this on my podcast. My parents retired and had always thought about taking that. Someday we'd take that one big, great trip.
Yeah.
And I was like, screw it. I'm going to do it right now. And my dad and I went out west. We went to New Mexico, Grand Canyon, Zion. Don't wait. Enjoy it. It's beautiful and mind expanding.
It is. And you'll never be as young as you are right now.
We
take it for granted that our legs work, that we can breathe easily. I mean, you want to go when you can still climb the hill. You want to do that.
What's on your list? Where's your bucket list?
Yeah.
Have you not been?
I've only scratched the surface of the earth. I need to get to India. I need to get to Australia and New Zealand. There are big parts of China I'd like to see. You know, I don't think anybody's going to Russia for a while. We need some changes made.
You could probably go. You might not come back.
I made a documentary there. It was kind of the bridge between being behind the camera and being in front of the camera. It's called Exporting Raymond. They asked me to come there, bring my sitcom, and help them turn it into Everybody Loves Kostya. And so I worked with the Russians. And my family thinks it's the funniest movie they've ever seen because of how much I suffer trying to get my point across to a completely different mindset.
On another serious subject here, and that is your family history related to the Holocaust.
Yes.
And as you know, Ken Burns has just released a new documentary.
I haven't seen it yet.
On the Holocaust.
Did you see it?
I've recorded it. It was last night. I didn't get a chance to see it. I didn't want to see it piecemeal. And I'm waiting to see if I even want to watch it because my wife is not in town right now. I want to see if I want to watch it with her.
Yeah.
But, you know, this anti-Semitism is spreading, rearing its ugly head again around the world. What do you think is what's behind this, Phil, this disease, this sickness that we see? And a little bit about what your family went through with the Holocaust, please.
I think old prejudices die hard. I mean, that the fact that that show about the U.S. reaction to the Holocaust and the spoiler alert, we weren't as fantastic as we like to think we were in our reaction. It took a lot. In fact, America wasn't going to even get in the war until Pearl Harbor happened.
Right.
And there was a bigger Nazi movement here than we wanted to talk about. To see the rallies this weekend where they're literally raising their arms, it's chilling. I'm the child of Holocaust survivors. I'm first generation American.
Yeah.
My mother was actually in a concentration camp in France.
I mean, what are they thinking when they do that? I mean, what could they possibly be thinking? You know?
Us first. They're thinking us first, our people. I think the term was used that I heard on another show today, Christo-fascists. It's very scary. And that if you do these parallels, you find that he's not Hitler, the Hitler we know yet, but he is the Hitler of the early 30s. Right now.
How do you keep laughing through all of that? Obviously, there's such pain in the world. And there's such pain in our your family histories, and also such joy. And I know your family story also has so many beautiful moments of triumph out of that. I think hearing that is amazing too. But how do you keep laughing through it all?
What choice do you have? The reason Jews persevered is partly because of their sense of humor. I think that was the currency in my house. That's how we communicated. When we weren't yelling at each other, we were laughing. And I think that you have a choice to make. You can be depressed the rest of your life if something that horrible happens to you, and you have every reason to be. Or you look at the bright side and see how beautiful the world is still, and that there are more good people than bad. You know, the lesson of the Holocaust, as horrible as it was we won, right? And we got to keep, it's a fight because there is evil in the world, but more people are good than not. That's my personal belief. I might be wrong, but until I'm proven wrong, that's what I want to believe. I think the governor's with me. We see the good in human beings. I think you do too, Jordan. I think that's, and I'm projecting, but I think that's why you're doing what you're doing. You have a message to get out, and you'd like to see the world change for the better.
I definitely would, sir. I definitely would. Before we let you go, I want to ask one thing. I like watching you eat. I like watching you talk. You got a book coming out, too. You want me to read about you eating food. Pitch me this. Why am I watching Phil eat / reading about it?
It's fun. And the whole message is, if I can do it, you can do it. So the book is like the best cookbook. It's behind the scenes of the show and all the things we might like about the show as a companion book. But it has 60 of the best, most requested recipes.
Where is it, Phil? When is this out? When is this book coming out?
October 18th. And I'm doing a book tour, and I'll be in all the cities in America. I'm going to everywhere.
You must work out. You must. Everybody's like, I'm gonna buy you this. Phil, try this.
Yes.
Your workout regime has to be intense to stay fit and spry.
You know how they make a dog food commercial? They don't feed the dog until the commercial. So I'm the dog. I don't eat until we're on camera. And by the way, having a few cameras pointed at you is a very good diet. It turns out. You don't eat as much.
You're not wrong.
Right.
You're a genius is what you are. You're a genius. You just are a brilliant man.
Thank you.
And it proves in the pudding with that show and with the things you're doing now. I think you're great.
I love it.
I love being with you guys. Thank you both.
Here we go. The sixth season of Somebody Feed Phil premieres October 18th. You can get Somebody Feed Phil, the book, the very same day, wherever you get your books. Phil, thanks for chatting with us.
I'll see you in your town.
I love it.
Bye, everybody.
Be well. Hey, everybody. Jordan here, your favorite host of the Kasich Klepper podcast. Thank you for listening this far. If you like what you hear, click like or thumbs up or whatever icon signifies a positive reaction. We love your ratings. We love your thoughts. Reach out to us on social media. Let us know what you want us to talk about, because I'm tired of answering the governor's questions and I just prefer to answer yours. Thanks for listening. Talk to you soon. Kasich and Klepper is a production of Treefort Media, hosted and executive produced by John Kasich and Jordan Klepper. Treefort Media's executive producers are Kelly Garner, Lisa Ammerman, and Matthew Kugler. Line producer is Oscar Guido. Associate producer, Lee Albanese. Audio direction by Tom Monahan, head of audio for Treefort, with production and editing by Maxwell Carney. Sound editing by Abigail Sullivan. Talent booking by Blythe Asher. With additional production help from Tim Schauer, Haley Mandelberg, Lindsay Whistler, Colin Motel, and Anastasia Ibrahim. This podcast is powered by Acast.